The Navy's Cyber Command has reached the grand old age of five. To celebrate, it's finalizing a new strategy. The new document outlines the concept of integrating the cyber domain into the broader warfighting domain. Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller, joins me now with details on where the Navy and the rest of DOD is heading towards with cyber as a tool for warfighters. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so how is the Navy Cyber Command developing its strategy so cyber is a tool for warfighters? That sounds like a leap over an air gap here.
I think in many ways you're right. I think they're recognizing just where cyber is going, has been in many ways. And this new strategy is centered around really five tenets, each with goals and timelines to achieve them. Kevin Cooley is the Executive Director and Chief Information Officer for the Navy's U.S. Fleet Cyber Command. He says the strategy came out of an effort of how the Fleet Cyber Command relates to the joint community at large and how the Cyber Command has matured over the last 4 years. Cooley says the first tenet goes right to the idea of cyber as a warfighting platform.
The first one is to operate the network as a warfighting platform. That entails or requires that we have assured command and control across all of those networks. And so when those networks span both ashore and afloat environments and different technical environments, that's a pretty interesting problem. We're pretty excited about making some progress there. The next one is reducing the attack surface that those networks present to a potential adversary. That's something that I think our industry partners here today play a good part in terms of how they design and develop and field some of the capabilities that we use. This involves everything from ensuring compliance to combating routine attack vectors like spear phishing to making sure that we've got an effective way of applying remediations for malware in the form of patching or new versions of software.
Cooley spoke Tuesday at the C4SIR and Networks Conference in Arlington, Virginia. He says applying defense in-depth tools and processes that balance capabilities and costs, as well as ensuring cyber is marbled throughout the financial acquisition and budgeting processes, also are part of the way cyber is moving into the warfighting domain as a concept. Cooley says the second goal of this new strategy is to conduct tailored signal intelligence to focus on specific network tools to help collectors and analysts do their job. Here's Cooley describes the final three goals.
Third goal is to deliver warfighting effects through cyberspace. That's nice language for conducting offensive operations in cyberspace. And so historically, we've been focused on defense. You don't win a knife fight unless you are able to swing a knife. And so we have to have right balance between defensive operations operating our networks and being able to conduct offensive operations under the right authorities, and those authorities come from U.S. Cyber Command. There are two more goals that actually could be viewed as part of the first three, but we felt they were so important that we've broken them out. And the first one is shared cyber situational awareness. You can make an argument that that's part of operating the network as a warfighting platform. It's a part of assured C2. But we feel like the lack of capability there is so significant and the operational relevance of that capability is so significant that we're actually calling that out as a specific goal in the plan. And then lastly, establishing the Navy's cyber mission forces. There are 40 teams that are being established across the nation, and those are the folks that are going to go out and do the nation's bidding in this warfare domain.
Now that's Kevin Cooley, the Executive Director and Chief Information Officer for the Navy's U.S. Fleet Cyber Command. One clarification there, Tom, when he says 40 teams going out, that's not 40 teams within the Navy, that's across all of DOD. There's a little bit of confusion yesterday at the conference when he said that, because I think some ears perked up and said, the Navy will have 40 teams, but to be clear, that's across all of DOD. Now, Cooley says the final strategy will be made public when it's ready, of course, which should come earlier this summer.
All right, so
Jason,
why do you think the Navy is out in front relative to the other services in its thinking around cyber?
I think the fact is the Navy has a strategy and is including this as part of their main strategy. I think that's a key piece. You know, it's unclear what the other services are doing in this regard, but the fact is this is where cyber is heading. I think many people agree to that. Cooley says the change in thinking with cyber as an operational element versus just an administrative function also gives the service a new way to react to problems in the cyber domain.
This platform, this set of environments, is directly relevant to the ability of the United States Navy and, in a larger sense, the joint force to accomplish the missions that it may need to accomplish to meet national aims.
Do you feel like the Navy is starting down that path of changing the view of cyber than just, oh, that's that thing we have to do to make sure our systems work and we have to meet the requirements, check the box, if you will, to that idea of, hey, this is important for the warfighter for these reasons?
Oh, absolutely. I've been working in the Department of the Navy for nearly 10 years, and the degree of attention, the degree of interest, the nature of the dialogue across the United States Navy, at the flag rank, at the senior executive rank, all across the force, is just dramatically different than it was 8 or 10 years ago. We're seeing the response to this in the way that we program, in terms of where money is placed on programs, so that you see shifts there. We see shifts in terms of the how people are spending their time. Flag officers from the four-star rank all the way down are spending a significant amount of time looking at this issue and thinking very, very seriously and deeply about how to effectively integrate warfare in cyberspace with warfare in traditional domains in a way that maximizes capability, effectively manages risks in the most economic way possible.
Now, Cooley says, think about the way the Navy or any service would disrupt an enemy's supply chain. This is how this idea of operationalized cyber may work. So, Tom, they could do a couple things, right? They could maybe bomb the airport runway. They could mine a port so ships can't dock. Or they could conduct a cyber attack to take out the power or water out or other critical infrastructure as a way to disrupt it. Now, remember, this initially was not thought of this way. Cyber was thought of, well, we'll just protect networks, keep data secure. But that's where the change in, I think, thinking is happening. Instead of just making it a separate domain, but make it a part of the quote-unquote warfighting domain.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. So how are the other military services and the other DOD agencies adapting to this new view of cyber for the warfighters?
Well, spending the day at that conference yesterday where you got to hear from a lot of different services and agencies, this idea is definitely growing and starting to take some hold. And I think the biggest factor driving this evolution around cyber thinking is the Joint Regional Security Stacks, or the JRSS. Now, remember, Tom, this is something that the Defense Department is pushing, that all the services are heading toward a security architecture that's common. Now, the JRSS is making progress. The Army was the first to move into this new security architecture. The Air Force is next, and the Navy Marine Corps will follow basically in the next couple years when JRSS hits version 2.0. It's currently just in version 1.0. In the meantime, the Defense Information Systems Agency also is talking about cyber and how to create cyber, what they call sovereignty. General Ronnie Hawkins is the DISA director. He says the JRSS is a game changer for how DOD will do command and control going forward.
When you start looking at the command and control and the capabilities that we're going to put at the combatant commander's fingertips, not necessarily at a signal, communicator, cyber individual's fingertips, we're getting ready to change the way we work. And in fact, within DISA, within the Joint Force Headquarters, we are even training differently. And what I would like to submit from a perspective with industry and the industry partners that bring the Joint Regional Security Stack together, because it is not one industry component that is doing that. It is multiple industry components. I would tell you that we have got to get it to where we treat the Joint Regional Security Stack as a weapon system. And we're operationalizing that within DISA, and I would also tell you within the Department of Defense.
Now, Hawkins says he'd like to see DOD move the JRSS out of the testing lab, quote-unquote, into the cyber range. A cyber range is similar to like a firing range where you test guns or weapons, but a cyber range tests capabilities both offensive and defense in specific settings that servicemen and women could face in the real world so they can learn what to do and what not to do, obviously in a safe environment. Now, Cooley says from the Navy, the ranges help assess both human and technical components of cyber skills and capabilities. Currently, DIS actually runs a cyber test range for the Marine Corps. General Kevin Nally is the CIO of the Marine Corps.
We are building it out. We did fund it internally in the Marine Corps to build out the Tier 2 and Tier 3 levels, and the Tier 1's virtually done. all the services, the Army, Navy, Air Force, to include us and Marine Corps, are all using the cyber range. It's busy every day, so the personnel in there are actively engaged. We're using it in exercises within the Marine Corps. We're using it virtually as part of our 0689, which is our cybersecurity technicians. The course out in 29 Palms is a capstone event. We're using the cybersecurity range as well.
Now, Hawkins says by having JRSS in a range, it also will let operators move to a higher level of readiness. So when their skills are needed due to a cyber attack or some sort of offensive operation, the Cyber Command, U.S. Cyber Command, can call on them, and they'll be better positioned to defend and or attack against a cyber actor or cyber threat. And I think that's key here, Tom. It's changing the view of cybersecurity, not just, okay, we got this thing that's in the back room that's got to protect the data, but how can we use this to an advantage, both offensive and defensive advantage?
And so, Jason, just to clarify, that means that it's Cyber Command is the one in charge of when a service can launch a cyber weapon back against some perceived adversary.
And you can even take it to the next highest level. The president probably would have to make that call. And that's something that's not clear yet from at least a public view of when that, who makes that call and when they make it. But that is something that the members of the panel yesterday, Kevin Cooley from the Navy specifically, said, we just are acting on orders. We don't make that decision. He was very clear about that. There's a lot of other people who make that decision, but us.
And did they indicate whether, if they were to use a cyber weapon, it would be clearly coming from the United States? In other words, if you fire a Hellfire missile from a helicopter, everyone knows whose helicopter it was. But in the case of cyber, most of the attackers try to hide themselves. Would the United States come in and say, this is coming from us? Bang, zap.
Yeah, it's interesting. Whenever offensive capabilities comes up, there's always a lot of questions, but there's never a lot of answers or a lot of specifics about that. This is one of the things about Kevin Cooley was I thought he was very candid in many ways about the strategy and the fact is offensive capabilities are being built in. And the fact is that there are times when those skills are necessary. But how they'll be used, when they'll be used, who will use them, all of that is really still under the covers, if you will, because I think there's a lot of, I'll call it concern, anxiety over how they get used and who uses them. So that was not an issue that came up in the least, but in fact, I've never heard that issue come up.
Interesting. All right, so we have the Internet of Things 1 and now the Internet of Things 2. Jason Miller is Federal News Radio's executive editor. Thanks for joining us with that report.
My pleasure.